Hello, gorgeous beasts. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast and enjoying it and staying with us and doing deep woo-woo stuff while at the same time getting your laugh on with Cassidy and myself. We want to let you know before the podcast today that I'm doing a 3-day healing retreat in Mancos, Colorado, known to many a spiritual practitioner as the womb of the world. We have room for 10 people to join us on this 3-day healing retreat, during which time I will be channeling all of the different light beings that desire to come through. So different races of light beings exist, like the Mintakans and the Pleiadians and the Sirians and the Lyrans, and they like to show up and contribute high vibrational healing energy. So what we'll do is November 6th through 8th, you'll join us in person here in Mancos, Colorado. We've got discounted hotel rooms for you all set up. It'll be stunningly gorgeous and crazy high vibe. And this is for people who are looking for healing, integration, and or to know God and the divine more intimately. You don't have to be traumatized to be on a spiritual path, and being traumatized is kind of helpful when you're on a spiritual path. So join us November 6th to 8th, Mancos, Colorado. Email me if you're interested, klrubin@gmail.com. That's K as in kiss, L as in love, R-U-B-I-N at gmail.com.
Welcome to that spiritual actual factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of cash. We laughing, we drafting the passion to bury. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass me. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
You know, on that topic, lovely segue. Someone asked me today, a client, student, friend person who listens to the podcast a fair amount, said, hey, so heard the Gern Blanston episode. Everything in there seems to have happened except for this earthquake thing. Have you? And she was also reading my recent newsletter thing. And she said, is there somewhere I could go to read about the earthquake part? And I go, not yet. I haven't written about that because I really didn't. It's hard to be holding this awareness for California, and it's hard. And I think I just didn't want to know too much more because already it's so shitty. But she asked, and I said, well, maybe what I'll do is open the records and write about that and post it in a newsletter. Or I said, maybe we'll talk about it on the podcast and we can kind of look at that if we want to. And we can also be like,
yeah, I will say though that like this podcast probably won't come out for like 3 or 4 weeks though. So that might be,
I mean, we can't do much about that. Well, so we have Callum coming today, our buddy Callum. I imagine he's going to have his own questions.
I mean, we'll just, I have no idea what we're going to talk to Callum about. I just like the guy. He's one of those people.
He's just a good egg, right? Yeah, he's just one of the more fun individuals that exists. Don't you feel like anyone who meets Callum is just like, this guy?
Yeah, he definitely carries that spirit of like, we're going to be okay if we're here with you, you know, that energy.
Also, like, he always just carries the energy of fun. He's always just like spirited and like, now let's do this thing. I don't know. He just he's really like, well, yeah, we got a VW van and we're going to drive to where we've turned it into a building, you know, or like, yeah, we're working this ridiculous feet first job. It's going to be great. And I'm always like, thank God you're here, because I was not feeling like it was going to be great.
Yeah.
He's just a good like guy. A happy motherfucker.
Yeah. And he weirdly, we'll talk about him in the third person with him not here for a little while. He's someone I've actually known a little bit, about as long as I've known many people in the Bay Area. Like, I've just been knowing him for like 20 years, even though I don't know him, you know, for most of those 20 years, I didn't know him that well. And we got to be better friends more recently. But he's like, oh, it's that guy Callum. I feel like he's been in my
sphere
for so long.
How funny. Was it first through improv or what?
Theater, you know, but more like the commercial agent type of world of like, you know, going to auditions or hearing about films that were being made. And he was involved sort of peripherally and right. like comedy and weird, interesting events. He always seemed to be someone who was just always like, oh, he's cool. He's one of the cool kids. He was one of the cool kids before I knew the cool kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
The cool kids.
I had a lot of that going on in my early time in the Bay. Those are the cool kids.
Yeah.
How do I get to be one of the cool kids?
That makes sense for sure. Yeah. He just has that, like, I don't know. I actually don't know how you do that as a person. Like, I have a lot of like initial puppy dog energy with people where I'm like, hey, and then I get like internal and centered and quiet and not that interesting.
Yeah.
And so people who kind of like, maybe he's just an extrovert and just like a fun guy. I don't know. Maybe he's got Aries in every planet. So he's just like, full
I'm trying to think if I've ever heard him talk shit. He's a smack talker in the fun way, like with you personally in the place that you are. But I don't think I've ever heard him be like, fucking Katie Rubin, blah, blah, blah. Like
right?
talk bad about something outside of the situation that you're currently in.
Right.
Or badmouth an event or something.
Yeah, like we 100%.
Like we do all the time.
Yeah, I'd be on feet first gigs with him, be like, this fucking guy. And then now we got to go to this fucking. And he'd be like, yeah, it's going to be great. So here, pick it up. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And then he sweeps you into his like positivity land. It's great.
He's going to come on and be a complete asshole and just a grump.
Yeah, right. He'll be like in a terrible mood and he'll be like, this is a miserable experience. Both of you are terrible individuals. By the way, how are you? Like, how are you? I have this whole experience of having left California and being,
yeah,
I feel safe and the sun is shining and what an energy field I'm in. And then I'm like, how the fuck are you?
I mean, it's been pretty awful for the last week or so, just the living in, but literally today, like we woke up and all the little, you know, I have like four different apps I opened to look at air quality and they were all green. Like what? Like it dropped to like six, not just like 22, but to like six near my house. It's crazy. And it might be fluctuating, but like it just went away overnight.
Weird.
Yeah. And you know, great. Weather patterns.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God, I freaked out a little because I looked at a map, a general map of like air quality all around the West Coast. And like California is like varying degrees of yellow, red with some splots of purple and some yellow and some red and some purple. And most of Oregon, and literally at the time I looked, the entire state of Washington was purple on this map, which is bad. That's like the worst.
Wow.
So like, I don't know what's going on. And I didn't even know that Washington was that bad, like was in that much. Like, are they getting all of the California and Oregon smoke in addition to some of their own or something?
Right. I wonder. And interesting you say that because yesterday, my buddy Yvonne, who we had on the podcast, who had the Mint Hawkins come through,
mm-hmm.
she just drove. I drove the 5 mm-hmm. from NorCal all the way down to the Grapevine and then went east.
Oh, which was interesting.
Weird, but I did that. And then the whole way down, it was black sky. I mean, dark, dark gray ash the whole way. Then that was Saturday. That was Friday.
Friday.
Today's Wednesday, right? She drove down yesterday, which was Tuesday, and she said it was the same. She was like, the whole 5 was shitty. And then she got to LA and she was like, oh, it's way worse in LA.
Huh. So that's a switch too from what it was some days ago. Like LA had cleared up a little bit. It was still bad, but like, and we were still the bad spots.
And maybe like overnight it all changed.
Yeah. I haven't checked other places that much. I mean, I checked Shasta because that's where my folks live. I always peep it just to see. And it's kind of hovering around 140. It's just like, oh, that's bad. But now I like reset the bar. Like it gets down to 70 and you're like, let's go to the beach. Which is terrible because that's still really bad smoky air.
I don't know what the scale.
It's just like particulates and they go like 0 to 50 is fine, is like healthy. 50 to 100 is like, I think they say possibly unhealthy for sensitive groups. And then 150 to 100 to 150 is like definitely unhealthy for sensitives and probably other people.
Yeah.
150 to 200 dangerous, like 200 and above, like do not go outside because it can really, it's actually like smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. And so yesterday it was like somewhere around the 100 somethings and now it's like six.
Yeah. At least last I checked. I'm just curious now while we're talking. I'm going to pull up my purple air. Otherwise, how am I? I'm doing okay. Rami's packing to leave this week and go back to New York. So I have so many different feelings about that. Like I'm both kind of ready this time. Like we got a bonus 6 months of like intense us time, like best friend time. And that was like the one benefit of this whole shit show. And then I'm also going to be really sad. And I'm realizing that I'm like, oh it's going to hit. I'm predicting, and I'm going to try not to do it, but I'm predicting getting really kind of directionless for a little while. I can tell. Like, I know that's what I'll do. I'll just get sad and watch TV.
Yeah.
And not be able to figure out what I'm doing. Like, do something. I don't know. I don't have a job.
Does Rami kind of contribute to you feel like having more structure in your day in general?
Yeah, I'll be honest. The three in me forces, even if it's not necessarily structure, like Rami fills their time with things like a checklist of stuff, like self-improvement stuff, workshop stuff, doing artist ways, like doing shit. And I don't necessarily, but I also, when they're here, I'm more likely to put on the appearance of, which then also becomes doing the thing of like, find a thing to do. Do a thing. Get out there. Oh, what are you doing today? Oh, you have that list of things to do. Well, I will be fixing that thing in the backyard and doing this piece of gardening. And like it inspires me. I could use the positive version, which is they inspire me to like stay doing things.
Engaged with whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And part of it is not wanting to look like a slug around them.
I get that. I really get that. I have a thing here where I'm like, my house is like 9 minutes out of the little town area. And almost every morning I go to the coffee shop and then to the dog park in the morning in the town, because being around people in the town makes me be like, oh, and then this and this other, here's my business card and I'll go to the grocery now. And oh, right, I got to call that guy back. But if I just stayed here, I'd be a little like, wow, it's so peaceful here. I'll just lay down again. Or I'll just like, I don't know. So I hear you. I get the stimulation from people. It's something I learned actually in human design, that the way my chart is, it's like, if I'm around groups of people, non-distinct, not talking to them, not best friend, just like around human mammals, I get activated and I get like, busy and functional.
Yeah.
But if I spend too much time like out here in the middle of like nature, which my spirit and my body need for recovery time, it's like everything could become recovery time.
Right. Yeah. And like, I'm also relatively unemployed, so I don't have anything to do. And I feel weird about that. You know, like, what do I do with not having anything to do?
Yeah, that's, I know. I would have a really hard time with that. I know. I mean, it's tough. It's that thing too. It's like as a self-employed person, I was just talking about this today in therapy about how, like, I said to her, like, I'm pretty damn good at this point at managing my anxiety around, this month, will I have clients? Will people come to my class? Will it work out? Like, I've been self-employed so long that I'm like, I'm pretty good at either taking action when I'm feeling anxious to make sure stuff happens, or surrendering it and saying to God or the universe or life, like, hey, bring it, because I'm taking myself out of the managing this role. You bring it, because I can't manage this. Like, so I either go to spirit or I take action or I just rest. And so I was telling her, I'm pretty good at all that. But I said, is there ever a point as a self-employed person where you're just like, good? You're just like, you just trust it's going to come. And I just trust myself to take action when I need to. And I just flow and I have trust and it's trust. She goes, I mean, you'll have more of that. Yes. And like, there's always a modicum of anxiety with self-employment because they're just it. She's a therapist, so she's self-employed. But she said, this made me feel better anyway. She's like, you know, I've been doing this. She's like in her early 70s, but seems like she's 55 to me anyway. She's like, I've been doing this for 30 years or something. And she's like, I now know and trust that it's all good and people come back and it's fine. She said, but every now and again, I'll have a weird month and be like, oh, are we going to be okay? Is this all right? So that was something we were talking about today.
Yeah.
And like, that was all to lead up to what you're saying. I go, like, kind of one of the things I was venting about in therapy was like, I wish I just didn't have to navigate that anxiety. I wish I could just get to a place where it's like, I'm always set because I always have at least X amount of money and I always,
yeah,
you know, so I just don't have to have any of that anxiety. And then I think about if I had nothing to do, like the anxiety is challenging sometimes, but it's like, then I get busy and then I have clients and then I have things to do.
Right.
So it's a toss up.
So like there's two kinds of stress. There's the stress of like, oh God, I have so much, there's so much on my shoulders right now. And as a result, I'm actually pretty happy because I'm even though I'm like, God, I wish I had time off and had nothing to do, yeah. But I'm also then not free to just wonder what, whereas when I have nothing to do, all I can do is like come up with possibilities of failure or something like that's not actually what I'm doing, but
no, yeah, but yeah, exactly.
So
it's like you trade one form of anxiety for the other.
Yeah.
What was it? I heard somebody say once, he goes, you're not trying in life to have no problems. You're trying to have better problems. And then he said, like,
absolutely.
Because it's like, if you get more money and more, whatever you want more of, then you have different problems. You got to take care of that money. You got to make sure it's growing and you got to put it in a place and you got to, you know, whatever. So then you're managing that. And that's a different set of problems. So you're never like fully problem free.
And then there's the final nail in the coffin, which is not like, I'm weirdly not freaking out about like the future. I mean, the human future I'm freaking out about, but not like my career, the things, will I have a job? Will I have, will I ever work in theater again? Because will theater even exist or whatever?
Yeah.
But I'm not freaking out about that. But then what I'm doing is creating a story in which that's wrong. Like, well, then what's wrong with you? Why aren't you worrying? You're failing to think ahead.
Right. I know that one well.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, should I be this relaxed? I can't be this relaxed.
No, right? The world is on fucking fire, literally on fire. And I'm like, I'm pretty relaxed right now. is that okay? I mean, I'm doing the work, like the abolition action zap hour at Wednesday through Surge, showing up for racial justice. They do all these different noontime things where you just get online and make calls and send emails and it's cool. So I feel like, okay, I'm doing some work there. I'm showing up there, doing that, using my spare time for good, but
right.
Well, not much else I can do.
That's the thing. I always come back to that. I go, I mean, it's the serenity prayer, as goofy as it is, like grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Because it's like, we can only control what we can control. And that's another thing about being self-employed that I'm always like, there's a lot you can actually control as a self-employed person. I could constantly be putting my postcards places. I could shake hands all day with people. I could go to every healing event in the world. I'm not gonna, but that's what the mind will do. It's like, I could do any number of things today for my business, but then it's like, okay, so the wisdom to know the difference, like what is actually mine to do?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, transparently speaking, the serenity prayer was a big part of why, because I got into the 12 steps in my 20s, I really wanted the wisdom to know the difference, which is why I got into like a lot of the spiritual shit. Well, also I was in a ton of pain and nothing else worked, and it was like going to be what my life was going to be anyway. But one of my motivators was like, I would like to know the fucking difference
Yeah.
between what can I control and what can't I control.
Yeah.
So I've been playing with that ever since. That's part of what I love about being able to open the records. It's like, well, what's mine to do?
Right. You have the wisdom to, and you can also share the wisdom with others, give them the wisdom to know the difference.
Hopefully.
For their work. Because I feel like that a lot of the stuff you've given people has been like, that's not yours, or that's yours.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
should we just
tell
Des to give a text to Cal and have him come on?
I think it's time.
Well, okay. He's sending him a little thing.
I'm going to get my Coke Zero.
Do it. I'm going to sip on my water.
All the caffeine. All of it.
And I'm just going to hop on to do a shameless plug for Callum Grant, the host of the hit podcast Apocalypse Now.
Oh, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only.
Coming on in just a second. I just want to pick up, and maybe we'll keep talking about it with Callum, because I'll bet you he'll have something to say about this sort of particular thing. But the Serenity Prayer, without knowing it, also transformed my life. I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast. I came up with, in my own head, a philosophy that I called the givens at a certain point in my life in grad school when I was in crisis around just like, and suddenly I was like, oh shit, there are things that are. There are things that I can't not be part of because I'm in it. There's things I can change. So my reaction is the only thing I'm controlling. So, and it, that kind of distilled down into, I was like, oh, later, much later, it's like, I'm basically doing the Serenity Prayer with that. But it was like, the example is I had a teacher who we hated. I think I've told this story very quickly. Mm-hmm. Had a teacher that we hated, and we would just spend like lunch after her class, just raging, fucking hated her. And then I was like, we've done everything we can. We've petitioned to like have less of her in our class. You know, we've done all the things and we're in class and she's a teacher and we're in grad school. So this is the program. But also, I just left her class and I'm still in her class.
Yeah.
Now in at lunch, and she's taking this time away from me.
That's right.
And it was that moment that I went, oh, I could also just choose, or I don't know if I can choose it totally, but I can be like, I can just go to her class, get what I can get out of it.
Get the fuck
and
out.
Then leave it the fuck out behind.
Yeah.
Because nothing else that I'm doing is changing anything.
No.
In this context. And yeah. So I was like, okay, her class at this point is now a given. So right. That's a thing I cannot change.
Right. That makes total sense.
Yeah. And the thing I can change is my reaction to it.
That's right.
Yeah. And the wisdom was that moment. Like the wisdom to know the difference was that moment for me.
I fully get that.
But actually transformed everything for me after that. The way I saw the world.
Yes. Here's my thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's this. And we've talked about this probably, but sometimes here's what I find for myself being who I am, just talking about me as a human now, I need a certain amount of, I need to vent and I need places where I can go, that fucking bitch, no. And then I need to stop and let it go. But see, for me, for years, because I was like leaning all the way in the direction of complain all day and be a miserable sad sack. Then I swung all the way to the other direction. And I was like, I never complain about things I can't control because Serenity Prayer and spiritual person, and I can't control her anyway. So why complain? All the way to the other side. Then I realized I am still mad at her. I'm making up that I was in her class with you as an example, but like, wait a minute, I'm actually still upset and hurt, and this is unjust, but I'm just acting like I got nothing to say about it. So now I have this thing where I try to live in the middle, where I'm like, I need a minute to be upset about this. And now if I take it past that minute, I'm just creating drama and problems for my body and bringing other people into my own chaos. But yeah, I wonder about that, because I noticed that we either kind of do one or the other.
Yeah.
And I just, sometimes there has to be room for like, when I'm in that class, I feel like I want to murder her. Okay. I have said it. Now I'm going to say, I feel sad that I have to waste 2 hours there. Okay. Felt that. Now I'm going to move on.
Yeah. So you still need to have the thing. You can't deny the feeling.
I can't if I want emotional health.
No, I think that's valid. I think I had, in this instance, we'd done all the things, including the vent. So like, okay, now what?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've been on every side of that equation. I've probably been her. I'm the person who people leave class and go, this fucking bitch.
Well, the irony is, that she, one of the reasons we didn't like her is that she was bringing a lot of woo-woo into an actor training program. But the difference being, it never felt real to me. It never felt grounded. Like we had literally had an entire semester called Energy for the Actor.
Okay.
Interesting stuff. But I felt like she was just kind of casting about for like a menu of woo. Like, we're going to do color work today. And then tomorrow we're going to do this syntactics thing where you press on your palm for different feelings. And like, there was all these things, but it all felt very kind of like I'm being, I don't know, airy fairy. Now, as a healer, she actually did some body work. And one time I was in a lot of pain and it was not totally appropriate for me to go to my movement teacher for body work. But we set up a thing. And yeah, she was the real deal when it came to the actual doing of the things.
See, that sounds to me like a healer who's still trying to be an acting teacher.
Exactly. Oh, and when she would do like acting things, we'd all go,
oh, God. Oh, no. Because
she was our movement teacher is what she really was, ultimately.
Right. Callum Grant, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, guys.
Callum Grant.
Callum.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up? Great to see your faces.
So nice to see you.
Oh, my God. You look great. You guys look great. Man, we're like the freaking Hollywood Squares.
Look at you in your little baseball hat. You're so cute. Oh, it's got a bison?
Oh, buffalo, bison, yeah.
Is bison the plural of buffalo? No.
No, they're different beasts.
Okay. Oh, Callum Grant, we were talking about you before you came on. All kinds of negative gossip, shit talk, shaming you.
Yeah.
We told the listening audience about your most private secrets.
Oh, God. Thank God that's out of the way.
Yeah. You know the one, right? The one involving...
The horse.
Oh, yeah. And the runaway tractor. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, I know what you did last summer scenario. Yeah.
Did you get the surgery finally to repair the damage?
I do. You can. Can you guys see the scars?
Yeah, look at that.
Well, upper body ones.
Yeah, well, I don't want to show. Is this going to be on video? I don't know if I want to show you guys.
No. Don't take your penis out. Don't. No. Don't take it out.
Fool me once, shame on you, right?
Well, we were talking about you and really just being like, this motherfucker and all the positivity, and we all, every time we're around you, we're all uplifted by your wonderfulness. And that's actually what we were saying. And I was remarking about, like, anytime I've ever been on any kind of gig with you or in any context, really, I'll be like, wah, wah, Eeyoring all over it. You'll be like, you know, but also this, here, let's play sock puppets. And I'm like, I feel better now that you're here. It's kind of like the role you've played in certain scenarios I've been in with you.
Oh, that's great to hear too. And I love, but believe me, I love the salty and the sour and the tang. That's like a big part of my humor as well. I love the dark, and I think that's really essential as well. But the other thing is I don't like to see my friends feel down. You know what I mean? Yeah. Genuinely down. So I guess I'm always looking for a little pressure release valve just in case they're serious or a little too serious about it.
Yeah.
You know, because man, sometimes, especially the times we're living in now, you got to throw your hands up and go like, if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry or throw myself off of something high.
Yeah, for sure.
Where are you? Are you in the city, San Francisco?
Oakland, California. Yeah.
Which part? Where are you? Over by the lake or
near Mills College, actually, right where 13 and 580 meet. Millsmont, it's called, because it's kind of between Mills College and Montclair.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Laurel District, Diamond District. Yeah.
How's the air quality there today?
Way better. I've got a little air quality monitor.
We were just talking about Cassidy's air quality monitor.
Oh, I don't have an indoor actual monitor.
It's green?
Yeah.
The air quality monitor is green. It was red yesterday, and it was red this morning when I was making breakfast.
Yeah, and then just suddenly, at one point this morning, I rechecked purple air, and suddenly everything was green.
Everything was great. Yeah.
I was like,
it was really, 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 really bad. Cassidy, I'm sure you know, remember when it was like Mordor outside.
Well, what's weird about Mordor Day is that when we were living on Mars, the air wasn't as bad. That was a weird day. The air was only like 60 or 70, but it was red outside.
Oh, yeah. It was
the weirdest.
it was like all the dust was, and boy, talk about a metaphor. All of the pollution was, it wasn't in our immediate vicinity,
it
but
was
man,
just
it
over.
Was all held
it was a
aloft.
Dome.
We were under the dome. I mean, we were literally under the dome.
I mean, that was the day I was packing my apartment. That was the first day I started. I came back from Colorado, arrived on Mordor Day and went, what the fuck happened while I was gone? This is fucked. I'm going to hustle now because I need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I think you, well, I was going to say, I think you know what happened or what's happening. I listened to your, by the way, fantastic podcast. I'm thrilled to be on it. And yeah, really great. And the one I started with was the episode where you talked about Rocktober and what's going to happen next month.
Was it the episode entitled Gurn Blanston, now infamously titled episode?
Gurn Blanston. I love Comedy Is Not Pretty. That is, I got that reference.
See,
right away.
He
I was
knew
super,
it.
Super
where's
psyched.
He from again?
Comedy Is Not Pretty. Steve Martin. He said, that's my real name. I'm comfortable enough to say my real name is not Steve Martin. It's a stage name. My actual name is Gurn Blanston. I remember that was the first comedy album I ever bought when I was like 12.
That's funny. Okay. So my first album, I bought Casey and the Sunshine Band. It was Warped. So I took it back and got Wild and Crazy Guy instead.
Oh, that's awesome.
First record album I ever owned.
Wow.
I was going to say, have you ever seen that double album of his where it's half, one side is him playing banjo and the other side is him doing stand-up? And it's got, he looks like Bob Seger and Kris Kristofferson had a baby. He's got this full beard and a banjo and like full denim jacket. He looks, I mean, he looks incredibly hot. And then the other one is him in his pink shirt with the arrow through his head on the other side of the album. But it's, it's pretty good.
I recently heard, I've read a bunch of his books and heard a lot of interviews with him. And I think I rewatched the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode with him. And he was talking about how, I love this idea. He, you know, Jerry Seinfeld was like, so you left at the height of things. How did you tell us about, like, how the hell did you just leave stand-up when you were the world's biggest stadiums of people, 20,000 people per night? And he said, he said two things. He said, one was, I knew that the kind of humor I was doing was something that could get very annoying very quickly if I were to ride that train forever. And he said, and the audience would get ahead of it eventually. He's like, I was ahead of them because it was in the context of having come out of the Vietnam War. And there was so much stress in the world that he said he felt like his job was to just bring utter surrealistic ridiculousness to the context of the world. He said, but the world was healing. And he was like, eventually it was going to be a really annoying.
Yeah,
and he also said, I knew it took me 10 years to get that much material and it would take me another 10 and I didn't have it in me. And I just love his transparency and his vulnerability to say like, yeah, sorry, did that, can't do more. I'm doing other stuff now.
Yeah. And what a brilliant transition. I mean, I still remember his TV special. Oh my God. He did this big TV special near the end of his stand-up. It was after The Jerk came out and I watched it every time it came on. Of course, there's no VHS or anything back then. Back in my day, he did this big Steve Martin comedy extravaganza. They did that song, that song El Paso? Out in the old western town of El Paso. He did an entire music video where he acted out the entire song, but everyone else in the play was chimpanzees. And he was it was pretty incredible. Okra Cola. Oh my God, I love Steve Martin.
Yeah, it's a gem.
Man, well,
that gear shifted into like, I'm a kind of erudite playwright and then like screenwriter. And like he has built, that his thing was like, he was a philosophy professor or about to be one. And then he became a comic. And I feel like after his comedy, like his overt stand-up comedy period, he kind of integrated his more subtle, kind of sophisticated, like aspects of himself into the next layers of the work he did, which I really liked that personally.
Well, that's like his self-awareness in like, what he was doing was actually not wacky. It was absurdism. Like he was already aware that what he was doing, and he knew that at the point it became not serving the same purpose, then that's, we got it. I got to move on because otherwise I'm actually not being true to the actual underpinnings of this comedy, which is actually very deep and very transformative and very important.
and very reflective of the time that it was in. Like you're saying, Vietnam, he was holding a mirror up to the absurdity and the insanity of the way that we were living and the insanity of modern life and all of these old sort of Beaver Cleaver ways of living. He kind of turned everything on its head and was just completely outrageous. And yeah, that was the temper of the times. Like you said, when people are healing, then you don't hold that mirror up anymore. It becomes a funhouse mirror after a while and keep doing the same shtick. He truly evolved. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And it makes me think of, I think I was listening to, can't remember who I was listening to, some podcast the other day, and they were talking about, somebody was talking about the absurdity of war, right? And how we all in our, I mean, okay, not all of us, but we lefty, liberally folk, generally speaking, tend to have a feeling in our bodies of like, we could just not do war. We could just not. How about we just don't? Because it's so fucked up to just murder each other in an overt way with big, loud guns that really do the job well. We could just not. We could have a chit chat. We could see a healer. We could like be mad at each other for a while and like not hang out. We don't actually have to decimate populations, right? So like there's the feeling of that and the spiritual sort of knowing of that. And then there's the reality of the world we live in and where the animal level, where it's like, I feel like I told the story maybe on here a different day, but the Sufi master who was the head of the Sufi school, who was like this respected master, came to America and he was like, you know, it was like the most peace and love energy you can imagine that he would transmit. Anyway, one day, I have told this, but he just said, you know, look, when people come to your house with sticks on fire, you pick up a brick and a gun. You don't let them in to meditate. Like if they're coming at you with guns, you have to pick up your gun. So it's like, the reality of the world we live in, if there will always be people who behave barbarically, let's say, you've got to be willing to barbarically respond in certain settings. And like holding the tension of those two opposing energies within ourselves of like, this really shouldn't happen and we could just stop, next to, but if someone comes to my house with a gun, I'm going to have to like run or shoot them. Do you know what I'm saying? Holding the tension.
100%. That resonates completely. It makes me think about, you know, sort of our evolution, how, you know, how they say all politics is local, but yes, all politics in a sense is really personal. Like our voraciousness, the way we destroy the environment sort of is related to our appetites for sugar and fat that we evolved, that, oh, we've got some food, we better eat as much of it as we can. And of course, if somebody is coming to your house and breaking in and trying to kill you, you respond that way. That's something everybody can identify with. Problem is when you blow that out to a geopolitical scale.
Yeah.
We use those metaphors all the time, but they don't. There are so many more options for a country when someone is metaphorically coming at them.
Right.
But we use that simple, oh, they're breaking into our house and shooting them, therefore we have to kill 50 or 60,000 people,
right,
in order to stop them from hurting us. So we make the personal sort of global. And the thing is, as a nation, there are so many more options to us. The thing that they say, like, war's the easy way out. We're actually talking about trillions of dollars of lost money, but guns and butter, you know, all this opportunity. I used to think, man, if Vietnam hadn't happened, what would our space program look like right now? We could be on Mars right now if there had not been a Vietnam War. If World War I hadn't happened, what would Europe look like? What would our culture be like? We lost how many generations of people? How many, you know, and how many Albert Einsteins have been killed at 6 years old in bombings? You know, we don't look at those costs. We just want a quick, easy solution. And so we reduce these national complicated problems, a simple, they're attacking us, we have to destroy them. Look at the way they talk about BLM as, oh, they're all rioting and looting and they're coming for the suburbs. You know what? Instead of spending $1 trillion, why don't we spend $1 billion trying to solve this problem and do the hard, hard work of talking it out and finding a solution?
And addressing literally the thing that makes the person come to your house with the stick.
Yeah.
You know, that person coming to your house with a stick, there's a reason they're coming to your house with a stick. So we should have addressed that Like that's the failure came way before they came to your house.
But that's
stick.
My whole point is that we all know that. We all know that, like, of course the stick moment with the fire is not the highest functioning way to communicate, but it's like when people around you function from there, but death is on the line. Like in that moment, if you, there's no mediator when right. when they're blowing a hole through your wall. So yes, we need to have, anyway, I'm not like, so therefore.
No, not at all. These are the questions I'm fascinated with. This is why I love like post-apocalyptic movies and stories and things like that, because it really, aside from the spectacular explosions and things, there's the question of like, who are we at essence when you strip away this veneer of civilization, when you make the fundamental question of what is the moral right thing to do? Who are we when you remove all the intermediaries who do your dirty work for you?
Yeah.
And you have to decide, like, that, you know, the trolley problem. Are you familiar with that moral dilemma? Yeah. Yeah. So
will you say the trolley problem for the listener?
Yeah. It's this idea that there is imagine a trolley moving down a track, and it's going to run over three or five people, but you have a switch in front of you, which can switch it onto another track. Do you switch it onto the other track where it will only kill one person? So it's a sort of you now become responsible for that one person's death, and you'll save five, but you will kill one.
And so you made the choice.
But then the trolley problem sort of extrapolates out from that. And there's this idea of you're standing on an overpass above the trolley with somebody else, and you could see the trolley heading towards a school bus full of children. If you push the person next to you off of the overpass, they will fall onto the track and stop the trolley. They'll be killed, but you'll save those 20. And it's interesting how the answers change when it's you pulling a lever and then you actually have to physically push somebody off. And there's that level of distancing that happens. And then there's the question of what if it's one old guy and 20 school children?
Right.
What if it's the president of the United States and 20 school children? And these are questions that people develop.
What if it's one baby and 20 old people?
Yeah. Right. What if it's, exactly.
A puppy dog and a bunch of kittens?
Right. And these are questions that people designing like self-driving cars have to think about.
Yeah.
Do I save the driver or do I save the pedestrians?
Yeah.
I've asked some people who design, who work in self-driving cars and AI. Interesting. They get really squirrely when I ask them about the trolley problem, and they dismiss it and go, well, the way we're going to design it, that won't ever become an issue.
Uh-huh.
I find amazing to me. It's just, we're going to design that problem out of the universe.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hey, more power to them.
Yeah.
They can. I'm skeptical.
God, the trolley problem was introduced to me in Ruben Grijalva's play, Anna Considers Mars, where I got to be a comedic foil against somebody explaining the trolley problem.
Uh-huh.
And I got to have like a Minnesota accent and make a lot of jokes about it, you know. And it was fantastic. I had never heard it until like 2 years ago when we were doing that play.
How did I do explaining it? Did I leave anything important out?
No, you did it. You nailed it. That's the whole deal.
I find those moral questions really interesting and really kind of relevant nowadays too. Because man, especially when you talked about what was happening in October, I was like, you know something? January, February, that would have sounded like
nuts.
Now I'm like, or far-fetched, let's say, not nuts, but remote. And now I've shared it with a couple of people, three people, and all three of them have been like, yeah, that sounds totally possible.
Isn't that interesting? Imagine my experience in 2018. I tried to tell people like an idiot in 2018. I told a bunch of people.
Is that how long ago? I didn't know that. I didn't know it was that long ago.
Yeah, you've been carrying it for a while.
Wow, yeah. Katie.
Some friends of ours that we all share too. I think I was just really overwhelmed with the awareness, and like it was terrifying and scary, and I was trying to process with people, but I foolishly forgot that like people would give me more pushback and then judgment than support. It's hard for people to be like, good point. Okay, so in 2 years, when the world explodes, how are you feeling about that? It was like, not, I couldn't, there, There were only a few super woo-woo people who were like, oh yeah, I know. That's why we left California 2 years ago. Or, oh yeah, we know. Come over, talk about it. So I learned a great lesson, which was like, be really aware of who you're sharing what with, because it's silly to think that.
Well, Cassandra, right?
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. I tend to have to learn my lessons by doing shit in real time.
Go back to the classics. It's always in the text. Cassandra had the same problem.
It's like I can run into a burning building or read a book. I think I'll run in there.
Well, I'm glad you tried to tell people, and I'm glad I heard about it. We're actually heading out of town for the month of October. We're going to be in Palm Desert, although I don't know what the reading says about that.
Maybe we can ask when we open.
Yeah. But
Rocktober. I really like that.
How about Ragnaroktober?
Ragnaroktober. So true. I mean, the thing is like, why not us? Why not here? Because, you know, hurricane ravaged there, floods in Japan that took out a bunch of like hundreds of people. Like, and we look at that and we go, God, that's so terrible over there. And even in the same country, like, you know, the New Orleans in Katrina, you know, like that was catastrophe level stuff. And we go, well, but that's. I don't know. For me, I still keep going like, it's still not me. It's still not me. Like, I still have
in Ohio, right? They're having these massive winds and disasters in Ohio.
Really?
Or even the town of, you know, like 2 years ago, the town of Paradise, year and a half ago, actually, only, you know, entire town completely wiped out. I knew, I happen to know someone who lost their home there, lost everything. But like, so it gets closer and closer. It gets right up to your doorstep, but you still kind of go like, wow, okay.
Well, that's such a good, I love that sort of as a topic, because I've really been thinking about this a lot in terms of like when I drove back into California to get my stuff, right? It took me 4 or 5 days. Thank you, Cassidy, helped me pack, as you know, but it took a bunch of days to pack. And I had a feeling in my body the whole time of like, we got to get the fuck out of here. That was how I felt. But see, there's also my awareness of like, I have a hyper reactive system. Like my system is like so sensitive because of like my, honestly, childhood trauma. Like just the shit I've been through makes me be extra like, I'm like a cat on a fence. I'm kind of like, what's over there? What's over there? What's over there? And it allows me to perceive energies in different dimensions, but it also can be a challenge that, because a lot of people are like, you know, Katie, you could just like sit in your apartment and just wait and see what happens. You don't have to like flee the scene. Like you could label me leaving as like fight or flight response. Like I'm so freaked out that I just fucking jammed, right? Now, this is a different situation because I did get this information in 2018 and I've been asking for 2 years and I trust my guidance and all of that. But I don't want to throw out the window the reality of my own. You know, I've had the thought many times of like, is in 2 weeks, is all this going to pass and then California be totally fine? And I'll be like, what the fuck did I leave for? And I mean, the answer I get is no, I'm not going to feel that way. But you know what I'm saying? There's a way that like, it's because, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because as I was driving out, sorry, this is a long-winded way to make a point. As I was driving out of town, I kept thinking I would drive next to like apartments and houses and I'm looking left and looking right. And I drove the entire length of Highway 5. Not the entire length, but from NorCal to the Grapevine, the whole thing is covered in ash and you can't see the sky the whole way. And I'm like, why aren't there 9 million cars on this freeway? Why is everyone not like, we gotta go at least for a minute? That and like in response to my own that, like that reaction inside of myself makes me go, well, Katie, because, you know, maybe, you know, you have like a God, you see what I'm saying? Like, I recognize that I have a hypervigilant kind of like, I'm gonna go. But also, why aren't people a little more hypervigilant comes up for me a lot. Like, couldn't we all, like, shouldn't maybe everybody in California kind of fucking go? Like, why would you see smoke in the sky like that and just hang out? I have a hard time with that.
No choice, no options.
You feel like you can't leave. You have, there's confirmation bias in everybody around you. And you're also like conditioned by the fact, like Cassie was talking about, oh, it's kind of local. Oh, this horrible tsunami in Japan. If there was smoke like this over Washington, D.C. for half the year, can you believe that there wouldn't be like climate legislation and people
maybe
don't?
Not.
Maybe
feel like
not.
We're,
no,
we're,
maybe not.
We're the... It's a myth I hear, but the frog in the boiling water, you know,
right.
Which I also hear is a myth.
People
as
also
soon as
don't
it gets
want
too
it to
hot,
be they true.
Don't.
They just want to believe it's going to pass. This is a thing. We pulled into a gas station. Yeah, me too. We pulled into a gas station because we were getting home and I had about a quarter tank. And I was like, you know what? I just want to have a full tank in the car in case we have to run because it was really when it was really smoky. And you could kind of see the sun a little bit, but it was super smoky. And we pulled up to the gas station and Carrie and I both have our masks on and, you know, we're getting out. And I heard a guy talking to another guy say, oh, yeah, it's almost back to normal. And I was like, he said, yeah, I've seen people driving around and stuff. And wow, it's almost like things are getting back to normal. And I was like, the air is full of smoke. We're all wearing masks because of a plague. And we're just sort of like, oh yeah, this is fine. We're okay. No one's dead. Nothing's on fire that I can see.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Except that what I'm trying to acknowledge is that something in me says like, hey guys, the world is on fire. You're allowed to run. But another part of me goes, it makes sense that to sit still too. They both have their logic and they both come, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And you're fortunate in having a voice that's clear enough that it was clear what you had to do, even though it was difficult. Some people don't have that voice until the flames are literally like igniting their neighbor's shingles.
Katie.
Yeah.
Something about your move though. And maybe I'm being Pollyanna, but I feel like it's not just, your move isn't just the fear reaction.
Yeah.
Your move is also a positive pull, a magical magnetism that has occurred. Like that's, there's two things, but it's not just get the fuck out. Here's a place for you.
Right.
For you, that's your move is also very, like that was the original urge, but then beyond that, every time you checked in with it, it was like, yes, come this way.
It's
come
true.
On. And then it wasn't, get the fuck out of there. It was, no, this is where you need to be.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
but that's my Pollyanna version.
No, I don't know if it's Pollyanna. It's honoring the higher self is what it is. It's like, I think all of it is there. All of it is occurring. You know, the Buddhist saying, they say everything is true and it's opposite. I'm sure I've said that before on here, but like, you know, I had a fear response. And I had a higher knowing. They're both existing. It makes me think of too of another thing. A friend of mine, actually a new friend here, who I met like immediately, who's become like a bestie, who sometimes reminds me of you a little bit, Cass. His name is Chad, and he was talking about the concept of it's true. I know, right? They're both sort of similar names, Chad and Cass, kind of. And we have Cal, Cass, and Chad.
We gotta get to know this guy.
Say that five times fast.
But just talking about the thing where I can't remember he had like a pithy way of saying it, but like the gold is also the coal, like the coal and the gold of what you're going through are sort of the same, or like the way I might frame it is like two sides of the same challenge. Like like for example, me having like a ton of addiction stuff in my 20s, and trauma, that's the shit of it. But then the gift of it, trauma is a doorway to having access to other dimensions and the divine and all that. So it's like, it's the gold, but it's also the coal.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, it makes me think of that idea of like, it could be just a fear response. And from it is coming this great thing in my reality. Yeah, just that idea that like,
well, that's us humans. We can hold more than one thing at once. Multiple things can be true for us at the same time. Discerning and even asking the question, what's the best thing to do is such a complicated question.
Yep.
What is best? You know, life is like one big trolley problem.
That's right.
Sometimes, right?
And it's funny because that's exactly what we were talking about before you came on today, which was the idea of the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, wisdom, know the difference. And like, that wisdom to know the difference piece is a dicey proposition.
It is. It is. It's easy to forget that it's hard to know objective reality from our subjective perspective. And our subjective perspective masquerades as objectivity a lot of the time.
All day.
Like all day. We really need a change of scenery. We've been really feeling Carrie and I live in a studio. So we've been living in one room for the last 7 months under quarantine. And we are still together. It's amazing.
I know. Yeah. How is that happening?
It's a lot of talking and a lot of making space for each other and a lot of processing and patience and, you know, a lot of like...
Heroin?
Yeah, God, I wish. I wish. I can't have any contact with my dealer, unfortunately.
What about cake? Is it just cake for dinner?
Oh my God, she started baking right in the middle of the heat wave. So it was like 95 inside the apartment. She started making bread and carrot cake and banana bread and pies. And
that's actually what almost broke you guys up, that action. Weirdly.
I got a freaking kidney stone because I was sweating so much over the 3 days. Like at night, I'd be sweating. I'd wake up sweaty. I'd shower and I got so dehydrated. I got a freaking kidney stone 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God.
That's how hot it was.
Heat and dehydration led to kidney stones.
Oh yeah. I get them though. I'm prone to them. If I get dehydrated, I can start to feel that.
Oh, God.
And then I just start chugging water and doing jumping jacks. And
oof. On that note, talking about your pain, let's open the records.
Okay. Nice transition.
Nobody was talking about my pain, Katie, but okay.
I was.
What's your full legal name that's on your driver's license?
Callum McKenzie Grant, all lowercase.
I just want to jump in real quick. We got a little bit of a late start, so don't worry about going over. I do have to go pick up Cormac, so I'll disappear close to 5, finish up if you must, or I'll come back and rejoin you.
All right. So here we go. Let's do this now.
Okay.
All right. Let's just close our eyes for a moment. Yeah. And we'll just center ourselves, taking a couple deep breaths into the low belly. Let's become aware of the bottoms of our feet. I always start most of the episodes with my own records open. So I'm just asking if is it in our highest good to, we don't have to do that? Do we have to do that? No. So they're like, okay, we can just start with the prayer. Yeah. So just breathing into the body, becoming aware of your heart center, the low belly, bringing your mental attention to the center of your head, not the forehead, but the center of the head. And then just feeling the full surface area of the bottoms of each foot. Connecting ourselves consciously to the ground and to the midline of the body. Okay. And so we do acknowledge the forces of light, asking for guidance, direction, and courage to know the truth as it is revealed for our highest good and the highest good of everyone connected to us. Holy Spirit of God, protect me, please, from all forms of self-centeredness. Direct my attention now to the work at hand. I already forgot. There we go. Help me to know Callum McKenzie Grant in the light of the Akashic Records, to see Callum McKenzie Grant through the eyes of the Lords of the Record, and enable me to share the wisdom and compassion that the masters, teachers, and loved ones of Callum McKenzie Grant have for Callum McKenzie Grant. I'll go quiet for just a moment. Okay. All right. So the records are open for you, Cal. I'm just going to say out loud and ask just the Lords, Masters, and Teachers of the Akashic Records, and all the beings of light, and the angels. You've got like a team, like an army of angels with you, Cal, that you all open his records as wide and big and deep as possible, that I can be as accurate for him, bring through any healing that's required from him, see, hear, know, perceive any guidance you'd like to give for him with total ease and no interruption of my own influences or filters to the best of my ability. I mean, yeah. So just to share one piece, oftentimes there's an experience in the body for me of an initial impression of a person's spiritual nature and their energetic inclinations. In this case, there's a sense of a vast, wide, open field of consciousness that is organically in its essence, quite broadly, deeply, spiritually connected without the need for specific names or labels or practices per se. This is a person who is, I want to say, well-parented, loved, practiced at the art of love, has an open heart, cares about others, attempts to do kindness, similar to when sometimes a human being will say, I am an atheist, and turn out to be, in practice, one of the more, quote, spiritual people you meet. Not that this individual would say that, but similar to that, there may not be a need for so much practice because of what the heart has been given, A, in other lifetimes, and B, by the parents, and C, through the choosing of the free will of the individual himself. So that's pretty beautiful to see. Okay. And so we just wanted to offer that vision of your energy field. Where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin with, well, I suppose let's begin with what's coming up. In October, we've made a decision to head to the desert. Is this the place we should be going? Will we be safe there?
Okay. These are two different questions. So we'll go with.
Yes. Is this the place we should be going? Because it's more than just about safety, our trip.
Oh, what is the trip about?
I said earlier about a change of scenery, but there's my partner and I feel like we feel like we're on the cusp of transition into a new way of being. And this trip feels like a spin of the wheel, a shifting, a rotation. And
all right, number one is which desert?
It'll be Palm Desert near Joshua Tree.
Okay. Well, you know, I always want me, I just want to say yes, but I get a big fat no. Part of what the two of you are on the soul level asking for from your hearts is lush, green wellness. And you won't get enough of a different experience in Joshua Tree from what you're having now for it to provide you with what you're seeking. We would encourage you to look further east. Is there any connection you have to the East Coast?
Yes, that's where I'm from.
Where?
Long Island, New York. I also have ties to North Carolina.
Anywhere else?
My family in Florida, but that feels like the wrong kind of green energy.
So, okay, let's just listen here for a moment. So it's like, is it in Callum? And Cal, what's your partner's name again?
Carrie.
Okay. Is it in Callum and Carrie's house? Maybe go to Joshua Tree. They're like, so much no. It's not going to give you anything. And the image they keep showing me is of a thick, green, lush, watery forest of that certain kind of tree. I guess those are pine trees. Yeah, pine trees. I'm just going to check out loud here. So are we talking about New York? Yes. Upstate? Yes. Woodstock, upstate New York. Syracuse. What's that other one? Syracuse and something else with an S up there. Syracuse. And what's that other one? There's a school named after it. Anyway, up there, Maine, Connecticut, nope. Anything, Boston, nope. Okay, New York. Okay, so upstate New York, if you can, if you want, if you're willing, if you're able, is there anything closer that they could go to that would not really? Mm-mm. The transition you perceive yourselves to be in is as big as you don't want it to be. You understand how there's a way that deep within you, and there's sadness, there's great sadness around this point. We understand that the transition, you understand in a certain part of your being, this is bigger than simply taking a trip or going kind of away, but not really. This is a full a full rebirthing, a full transition. In fact, it's a, you're showing me a medicine wheel and a medicine wheel and a drum, like a shamanic drum. So this is like a shamanic journey of coming into the light as light carriers and as light workers. You have been understandably influenced by the environment of the city to embrace less fully than is appropriate your respective spiritual essences. That is to say, stepping into the roles of medicine woman, medicine wheel carrier, drummer, facilitator of shamanic transformation in a more conscious way. Now is the time. There are deep, does one or both of you have Native American or what is it? Tribal's not quite the word. Roots of any kind that you're aware of in the family lineage?
Not with me, with her possibly. She's studying native plants and she's taking she's studying herbalism right now and working with plant. She's worked with plant medicine for a long, long time, but she's studying herbal medicine and North American plants.
Okay.
She's studying she works as a healer and is looking to incorporate plants into her healing.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You have a larger role to play in her work than you yet get. And part of the reason is where you're sitting physically in the world, which is to say, you move somewhere green and lush with forest and you get who you are. And you get more deeply your role. You are almost like homesteader, homemaker, builder of wood, building the house, wood, trees, building, holding space. And then you're sitting inside the ceremonies. She's running and the people are there and you are a part of it and it is important. But you can't receive certain specific light code transmission, not the language, no. Certain spiritual, energetic awarenesses, certain spiritual, energetic transmissions, yes, where you are, you can't. You can't. Mm. That's not a failing of yours. That's literally how your being is made up. Your being is made to be every individual person functions best. Well, there are several power spots on the earth where people can function well for themselves, but it's different for the individual. So Katie here, I'm just asking, is there anywhere other than upstate New York that they could go for this trip that would contribute in the ways they're looking? And they say yes. Okay. And so where would that be? Michigan? And then they're pointing to, what is the spot directly in the center of the North America?
The belly button. Like, is that
Kentucky? Is that, what is that? Right in the middle. Minnesota?
No, that would be.
Does anyone have a map?
I'm looking right now. North America's geographical center, maybe in a North Dakota town called Center.
North Dakota?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Center.
Well, when you take in Canada, yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay, do you want us to take in Canada? And they say yes. Okay. Hmm. Do you want us to consider Canada in where we're looking at the center? You say the center. Oh, no. So what if you were to look at the center of just America, United States of America?
The geographic center of the United States is right here. It is in Lebanon. It is near, let's see. It is in Kansas.
Okay.
Right between Kansas and Nebraska.
Okay, now you're talking. Oh, God, that lights up the boards, man. So random. Nebraska for them, Kansas for them, right between Kansas and Nebraska. Nebraska.
It's in Kansas, just south of the border with Nebraska.
Yeah, that reads really strong. Huh. So, okay. So now they're like, okay, let him ask questions. So we've said a lot of things and Katie's asking questions. How would you like to hone in here now, Cal? What would you say next?
I would say, because I have always felt drawn to the mountains. Does anything in the Sierras or the Stanislaus, anything in California, or is California to be left behind?
Okay. Is it in Callum and Kelly's high school to be in California at all? No. California is to be left behind. Yes. That reads very strongly. Mountains, yes. California mountains, no. Wyoming, no. Montana, no. Kansas, yes. Northern New York. I'm just going to sit with this for a minute. Okay, so they're like, it would be refreshing and renewing for you to visit upstate New York on this trip you want to make. This is like a trip. You could make a trip to there and on the way, make some stops at some other places and vibe it out, feel it out, see what's what. But it would be wise, maybe Kelly is the one to do this, but it would be wise to ask for higher guidance as you check the individual spots. We don't wish to control you or make your choices for you. And we wish for you to be free and happy and whole and to have the abundant life you desire, integrated with the earth in a really organic way. That's a big part of it for you too, is that it's time to get out of the grid and into the land and become more one with it. They keep showing a log cabin and the trees that are, like we said, and
food, growing food, farming.
Food, growing food, farming, absolutely. Homesteading. She's doing this shamanic wheel somethinging, healing work. People come smoke fire, like in a healthy way. So that would be what is recommended. And as you make stops along the way, looking at, well, what does it feel like here? Do we like it here? For whatever reason, I'm sorry for it to be so random, but that center point of the country, they keep coming back to it.
Okay.
Go check it out if you're willing and able.
Yes. Should we take our bus? Should we drive our bus across the country?
Can you? Is it ready?
We are taking it to be repaired this week to have the fixes.
Yeah. I mean, that's a yes, as long as it's healthy. They're like, absolutely do that. Now make sure, like, look at all the things, like, don't half-ass the preparations. There's something with, like, it's dry somewhere, and then there is some rust somewhere, and then, like, carburetor. You got to, like, look at a bunch of stuff and handle it. But if it's in really good working condition, then absolutely. There's no reason not to. You can sleep in it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
10 people could sleep in it.
And would you be warm?
Yes.
Is it, like, insulated or?
It's warm. Yes, it's somewhat insulated, and we have ways of heating it and lots of blankets. Yeah.
Great, great, great. Then you absolutely
sleep over the engine, so it would definitely be warm.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Then yeah. Okay. What else?
I want to talk about my creativity. This is I've felt to be my calling for a long time, but what is standing in the way of these stories I'm trying to tell? Why am I not? Why is it so hard for me to organize my life in a way to get this done?
Yeah.
Have I missed my chance? Am I not called on to be a writer? What's my story?
Okay. So tell us about what when you say stories, do you mean like storytelling event, book, screenplay? What do you mean?
Screenplays, yes. Screenplays right now, but stories, tales. Yeah. Writing, getting them out to the world.
Tales. Are there specific tales already that exist that you want
to tell? Yes. Incredible stories, incredible tales. And yet I keep finding a way for life to get in the way. And I'm, yeah.
A couple things here. Number one. Huh, this is so interesting. Okay. Part of the problem here is, again, where you are physically. The consciousness of the state of California is you know, sell it to the people, screenplays, flashy television. We're sorry to say this is not organic for you. What is organic for you will be revealed more fully when you're in the proper space. You have to be more integrated with the land. And then you're going to, it's like the image is like you're chopping wood and you're carrying it to the hearth and then the fire is there. And then you're like three friends are over or 10 people are there and you start telling a story. You tell a story like in the old way. It's oral. It's oral through the mouth. It's storytelling. A big part of it is you and your energy field. You, how you tell it to, and this can be translated into book form. Storytelling podcasts, storytelling events, stories for people you invite over, record audio tracks of all of it, have them transcribed into the written form by someone else. So you don't have to bother with that technicality. And then you'll have a book or many books. If you show up for it. Part of why it is you think you have to do it a certain way. We encourage you to be embodied with it and to do it orally and record the sound and someone else writes it down. Your job, you don't have to write it down. That's part of the sticking point for you. It's like you're too visceral for that. So the energy, the consciousness of the people around you in California have you confused. You're hearing them talk. So you can't organically birth the stories the way they want to be birthed because you can't hear how they want to come out of you because there's not enough space around your body and there's not enough nature. Does this make sense?
Utterly. Yes.
Okay. Beautiful. Okay. Great.
Resonates very deeply.
Okay. This is what we mean when we say that this change, Callum, is so much bigger than what you're wanting it to be. It's like you're trying to mitigate it a little bit. Like, we could just kind of go to Joshua Tree. We'll still be near LA. It's like, nah, nah, nah. That bye-bye. Set it on fire with the whole fucking fires. Like, throw it in the pile and get out and go and be in the land with the trees and the house and the building it and then the stories around the thing and then you have it. And it all flows nice and easy. Now, you will have to, you know, temper your ADD a bit, or not temper it, manage it, you know, work with it. Okay, there's a misconception that like the ADD-ness of people is a problem. No, you just need to move around when you're telling your stories. Just walk around with a recorder or with people watching and boom, the stories come out. It's that you think, I have to sit down and write like a writer. You're not that guy. And that's not a problem. That's your gift.
That's so funny. Okay. Yeah. You just said that. I've just been collaborating on a project and I've been pacing and speaking and they've been typing and it's suddenly everything works. That's so funny.
Great. Okay, great. All right. What else?
I want to get I don't know how to even phrase this in the form of a question, but I drew three tarot cards yesterday that really, they were, the first card was Major Arcana, was the Wheel of Fortune.
Yep.
The second card was the Ace of Wands, which speaks to inspiration, new opportunities, growth, potential, emerging ideas, growing capability. And then the next one was the Knight of Pentacles, which is hard work, productivity, routine, self-discipline. So I have creativity, emerging ideas, freedom of thought, manifesting things, and then hard work, productivity, routine, and conservatism all tied together with the Wheel of Fortune, which speaks to the revolving wheel of life, fate, destiny, the capriciousness of life, chance, destiny, opportunity, winning, losing, impermanence.
Yep. So here's the thing. The wheel is also, in this case, in reference to your beloved and her medicine wheel. You two are a unit of, you're a well-oiled machine. I'm telling you that the medicine wheel, the wheel is the Wheel of Fortune. And the Wheel of Fortune is being spun because you are in communion in a deep way with a wheel master. She's working the wheel. So you together on the land in a new location, barks, like her wheel is turning and you're going with her. Okay. And then, and that's how it's meant to be. You're not, that's not anybody failing. It's meant to be that. And then when this is the same thing, then when you're there, all the ideas. And then, like we said, you'll have to work with your ADD, walk around, use the recorder, set time aside. You have to be diligent. You chop wood, you carry water, you make the fire. You're going to have to like build some shit with your hands. So it's going to be Capricorn Saturnian energy, just like that third card. It's just that you'll enjoy it because the wheel, the shamanic wheel, northeast, southwest, has you, how do we say it? It's like the wheel is the container for everything here. The medicine wheel, the wheel of fortune, the wheel of transformation, the wheel of timing, the wheel of change. Okay, so that's a lot of words. What are your questions in response to that? How does that land? What do you need now?
I just need to know that it's not too late. It feels like now is the time, but I fool myself so much. I've talked myself out of so many things. I've talked myself into so many things. And I don't even need everything to work out. I just need to know that it's the next thing, what I'm called to do. It's bigger.
So if you see me, my body, I'm like down and I'm stressed and I'm moved and uncomfortable. It's because of your mind is your greatest challenge. Part of why you need to be a little bit isolated and on the land and in more communion with nature is because out there, your mind will be picking up on less of other people's minds. A lot of what happens for you is your mind, it talks you into so many, just all this rational reason thinking, and half of it, if not 60% of it, is what you're hearing in your psyche from the people around you. You are a live wire antenna, Callum. You are sensitive. You are tapped in. Remember, we began this session by talking about you're like this broad open field of light. So someone like that is going to be overly, deeply affected by the environment. And the environment is poisoned by the negative thoughts of other people and by the fear-based thoughts of other people. Okay. So when you're in nature, you're just like, oh, I'm chopping wood and I'm carrying it back to the house. And oh, remember that time that I blah, 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 or oh, in this other dimension, there was a spaceman who, and you're just telling a story as you walk. And then you're just turning on the recorder and then it exists. It is far from too late. In fact, what I'm looking at here is that third quadrant, the third of your life will be the most productive third. You're stepping into it now. And some people hit their stride in their late 50s, 60s, man.
Oh, good. So, I got some time yet.
Yeah, don't worry.
Wow.
It's just according to the coastal judgments, East Coast, West Coast judgments, of like, by this age, you should have these things and the people and the money and the Hollywood and all of that. That's just a structure some people invented to boost their own egos. This has nothing to do with you. You're like a mountain man, shaman, wizard who needs to be with the pine trees telling stories to people who want to hear them. And you will feel so happy and fulfilled using your hands more, building with your hands, moving your body and being so physically engaged that you're just organically like communing with nature, that you're just organically like, I have this story to tell. And then from your heart, it just explodes out. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. 100%. 100,000%.
Okay.
Wow. So.
Never, please, listen to your mind. Never. Always the body and the heart. For you in particular, The mind is going to be like, and you could go any million directions, particularly your mind. Instead, expand, ground, nature, trees. Okay, you get the point. What else?
I always say that when I talk, the head lies, the heart doesn't lie. Like you always know when something is right.
That's it.
I guess I'm coming to terms with the fact that I might be an introvert to a certain degree. I would say that would shock a lot of people, but I always thought I need to be around people. But solitude is very nourishing for me. I guess I just have to let this stuff go. This idea of having things or security. The security doesn't feel very satisfying.
No, it never will be. But here's the irony, as you step into, listen, part of this truly, you're mark my words right now, when you get to where you're going physically, you will call me, please do, or text me, Katie, and say like, oh, I get it now. Because you literally can't know right now where you're sitting. You can't know the thing we're really saying. You can know it kind of, because you're not a dummy, but in your bones, you'll get there and go, oh my God, everything's so much easier. I just tell my stories. People come. I introvert all day chopping wood. And then we built this house. I keep seeing you building a house, by the way. And it's amazing. And my body feels so good. And the point being to your recent question is that there is a whole new kind of security about to emerge for you. It's just that it's what you're letting go of isn't necessarily the need for security. It's the need for the particular brand of security you were sold on by the culture you're sitting in right now, which is a culture that does not match your soul level vibrational frequency.
It never has. I always thought there was something wrong with me, that I didn't really have the respect or the reverence for a lot of the things I thought I was supposed to, but I guess there isn't something wrong with me.
That is correct. You are both starting to step into who you truly are. And a big missing piece is the specific vibrational frequency of nature, certain kinds of trees, a certain elevation, land, nature, wood. You need it.
Water too. Water.
Water. Yes. Water. Mm-hmm. All of it. But it must be.
This is like, I feel like I'm hearing my dreams spoken back to me, like the dream, not dreams in terms of fantasies. I mean, that, yes, daydreams, but really the dreams that I wake up and forget, you know, you can't quite hold on to them, but you know, they were great. Mm. Like, I feel like this is the stuff that I'm dreaming that I can't remember when I wake up.
That's because your soul knows, you know, in the Akashic Records, I'm sitting in your soul. Your soul's alignment to source, just listening to it vibrate and communicate. And when you sleep, the unconscious mind works with the soul and the spirit, and it gets to be free and it gets to be who it is in the dream time. And then you wake up and try to squeeze that soul down into somebody else's outfit.
Yeah, or try to speak it in human language, which lacks sometimes the ability to speak about it.
Well, you try to speak it in the culture you're in right now, California's, some word missing there. California's, like, the creativity industry speak doesn't match your soul's speak, but it's a difficult dream to give up that you could one day fit into that system. Some people are meant to find a way to figure out that system. That is not your soul frequency.
No.
Nor your partners, by the way.
Yeah.
So you have security. It would just come through your connection to the land.
I just feel like I've felt like I've wasted so much time. I felt for so long so bad and ashamed and upset and angry at myself and forlorn. And then I've spent more time being sad. I've wasted more time feeling sad about having wasted so much time.
Well, we offered this interpretation, beloved. What if your human self, your mind and your ego and your heart needed all of that suffering and time to be willing to surrender to who you really are? What if that was the grist for the mill? What if that was the crucible that your soul was squeezed through to turn you into the fire maker you're becoming? Yeah. Such that no time was actually lost. The suffering is required for the, think about a pearl inside of an oyster, right? It's like a piece of sand that gets agitated and agitated and agitated and agitated. And then it's a, was it wasting time when it was in the crucible?
Yeah, indeed.
It was becoming. Mm. And so hallelujah for all of the time confused and trapped and lost. And now is the time for all people, if they will be willing, to finally listen to the quiet, still, small voice. Here's the challenge of the still, small voice. It is so much quieter than the loud, angry, and or anxious, fear-based voice. And we are trained on the human plane to listen to the loudest voice in the room. But who is actually the wise person in the room? Is it the silent shaman in the corner who might be a 90-year-old lady? Or is it the loud man leading the big event on the microphone? Usually it's the quiet weirdo in the corner, but culture can't understand that idea. Culture is too interested in itself and its own power. A shaman, 90-year-old woman, is interested in truth and surrender to what is. And so now is the time, with all of the death on your planet and with all of the burning and with all of the rebirth, there has been no ability to move around. And in the inability to move around, you begin to hear the still small voice more clearly. This is the point of your stillness right now, is to hear the truth. Remember, as you travel forward, the truth will always be quiet. It will always feel like an inkling, whereas the lie will always yell at you. Hmm. The heart whispers, the mind yells.
Wow.
Aho, as they say. And so it is. I think we might be at time. Did you have any, is that correct, Cassidy? Are we somewhere?
Yeah, we should probably start wrapping up.
Okay. Any other last inquiries?
I had a question in the back of my mind, but it's my kind of a big one. But well,
let's try.
Are there children in my future?
Woo, that's the biggest yes all day.
That was easy.
I mean, the heart. Oh my God. My God. The heart energy you have opens so big and so bright when you mention, when you even just mention it. And it, you know what it does too? It takes away all that overthinking. There's no room left to overthink when you got to chop wood, build the house, raise the kid, make dinner, tell a story. Boom. That's your life. There's no time for the mind. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Aho. Amen.
Amen. Namaste. Wow. God. Oh, God. I want to be invited to whatever party you have with those kids.
Sounds good to me.
We're coming to Lebanon, Kansas. Well, you're a lot closer now, so.
I cannot wait to pull the bus up to that intersection of, let's see, where is it? What are the names of the streets? Let's see.
Oh, the actual geographic center.
Yeah. Route 191 and, oh my God, really? Ah Road. A-A Road.
Wow. Huh. That's the Hawaiian word for lava, isn't it?
Ah. A-A Road. That's bizarre. Well, 191, ah.
It's and that's right what you're going to say. And then you're going to call Katie and go, ah.
Oh, wow. There's actually there's a house right there. Ah Road.
Do they have a big yard for you to park your bus?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Always room for you, Cassidy. Always room
for you. I'm going to bring my, that RV that I'm going to get, even though they told me I probably shouldn't.
It's a convoy. We got a convoy.
All right, let me close Al's records here, just so I can come back to reality a tiny bit, or reality, whatever that is. Come out of Cal's reality, let's say that. All right, so we just want to thank the masters, teachers, and loved ones for their love and compassion, and the lords of the records for their point of view, and the Holy Spirit of light for all knowledge and healing. I ask for strong dispensation of blessings for Callum and Kelly on their journey, that they might have the courage,
Carrie,
and the will, huh? Carrie, Callum and Carrie on their journey, that they might have the courage and the bravery and the vulnerability that they require in order to follow their own guidance as they see fit. Protect them, send them angels, send them clear guidance and direction. And please, if you could, signs, sign after sign after sign, make it clear as day. I mean, and I ask that you return all of Callum's energy to himself, return him to his complete human wholeness, the divine portal and the Akashic records for Callum McKenzie Grant are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records for Callum McKenzie Grant are now closed. Amen. The divine portal and the Akashic records for Callum McKenzie Grant are now closed. Amen. 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 So it is.
Amen.
I'm going to break the silence and jump in because I have a story that's been burning with me about Callum, and it just got turned up. The volume got turned up because of it. My truly one of my absolute favorite, like cherished heart moments, not just with Callum, but like it now has lodged as just my a cherished moment in my life was when Callum and I were traveling to a gig, and on the way back, our plane got delayed and he has a like a titanium ukulele. I don't know, it's not titanium, but
carbon fiber. Yeah.
And he whips out this ukulele and we just start singing songs in the airport, in the where everyone's waiting for their fucking. And it could have gone like, oh, shut the fuck up. And instead it transformed the space and it became this little bubble of joy.
No.
Like for everyone around, another guy like brought out his little mini drum machine and started playing along with us. No. And like, Callum, we were singing like Elvis Costello songs and stuff. And like people were stopping and videotaping and just hanging out and like breathing. Oh. They're in the fucking airport. And like that's it. That's it.
That's the thing.
That's the thing she's talking about.
Thank you for that memory, Cassidy. That was an incredible moment that I can't stop grinning right now.
Yeah.
You just reminded me of it and all the noise and all the craziness and all the times that have gone by. And it's just like, ugh, those are the moments that stand out. And those are the things I need to remember and hang on.
The Phoenix airport, bullshit Phoenix or Tucson, maybe. I don't know. Tucson airport, just playing a ukulele.
Yep.
Yeah. And then being thanked by multiple people afterwards, like in line coming up to us and just being like, thank you.
And it was so great, Cassidy, that we knew all the same songs. Like we had the same playlists in our heads.
We have a little bit of the same cultural DNA, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We in the same Gulf Stream current we grew up in.
Yeah,
for sure.
Anyway. Just wanted to share that because I feel like it's a stamp of approval for the message that you were given today.
Well, thank you. Then that's a great reminder too to think about in thinking about the stories and in thinking about what the heart is reminding me is that song and music are a big part of that creative center for me and for my relationship with Carrie. We met because of music and the ukulele. She plays uke as well. And yeah, I've really... Katie, I got to say that line, the heart whispers, the mind shouts is going to be something I'm going to carry with me for a long time. I'm navigating in these times can be so confusing. And just remembering that internal lodestone, you know, that thing in there that you just have to stop and listen to is going to be very, very helpful. So amidst all the storm and drang, amidst all the fire and brimstone to listen for that little voice inside and quiet the shouting. Yeah. Thank you. And you're all invited.
Yay.
I'll let you know where it is.
Can't wait. Cal, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, this was such an amazing experience and a real tangible help, Katie. Thank you.
Oh,
you can see the light in your face, like the radiating out. You are doing exactly what you are supposed to be doing.
Oh, thank you.
It's really wonderful to be a part of and to share in. So thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste. Love you guys.
Love you too.
Love you too, Cal. Miss you.
Yeah, miss you too. I look forward to being able to see your lower halves at some point.
That'll be great.
Well, we can arrange anything.
Let's get offline, Cassidy, and we'll do a little private Zoom. Okay.
All right. Bye, Cassidy.
Bye.
That's it.
There's nothing to say.
Do your work.
Do your work. Thanks, guys.
What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah, all the answers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
How are you doing, Des?
I'm doing well. Thank you for what I heard. As usual, I can't wait to edit this episode and see what I missed. Like when that happens, I always come back and everyone's like, whoa.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.